Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are joined, as we always are every single Wednesday, by the great Tyson Alger of the I-5 Corridor, Lookout Eugene, Springfield. Tyson, good morning. How are your Thanksgiving plans going for the weekend?
You know, they're going pretty good. I just filed my last story for the week before the holiday. Kind of looking at this weather. I'm heading up to Seattle a little bit early. Not sure I want to brave this rain on the I-5, but you know, that's why I'm the corridor guy. So we'll do fine. We'll do okay with it.
Well, good, man. Well, in case I forget, I hope you have a great holiday weekend. Let's dive right. Let's get back into what we saw over the weekend as the Ducks take down USC 42-27. Where do we start with this? Was there ever a moment in the beginning of that game where you thought things might get a little sideways, or did you kind of expect it to be a little cagey like it was?
You know, when USC scored on its first possession, I was a little bit worried that we were about to get into like a track meet. Mm-hmm. Just because of what we had talked about with USC's passing attack. And obviously the big thing was trying to limit explosion plays from that offense. And we saw a few of those like from the get go and was like, okay, here we go. Like Oregon's offense is going to have to be primed for this one. And what we kind of saw was an offense that played pretty well, but I'm just continually impressed with Oregon's defense. Like they did allow some larger plays, through the air, but like by and large, like they were very consistent in that game, and they were able to shut down the running game and make USC one dimensional. So yeah, it's just one of those games where it was nice to see, in good weather against a good opponent, Oregon's offense kind of play like we saw earlier in the year. But by and large, like I've just been so impressed with the consistency of this defense and just what they bring week to week to each game.
Well, one of the things that this Oregon team has been talked about for this season is the depth at different positions. But the first time that we saw it on the offensive line this last weekend, were you just as shocked as I was at a lot of Duck fans that they were able to plug and play some guys on the offensive line that, I mean, Charlie Pickard, for example, last year, he had a rough season last year when he had to play, and then he came in and he did great. I mean, were you surprised? You followed the team a little bit closer, so maybe you weren't, but I was shocked at how well those backups played for the offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, just take into account what Dante Moore had to deal with in that game. I mean, like, coming into it, we know they're already down to four scholarship receivers. At one point, Jeremiah McClellan left for a few series, so he only has three guys to throw to, and we've seen throughout the year that Moore is fantastic when everything is going his way, but like in games where maybe the line hasn't been great, like that's when he's really kind of gotten a little bit more erratic. And so in this game, you're losing one of the best centers in college football, and then all of a sudden your left tackle, who's protecting your blind side is out too. And so you have two guys in there who haven't played a lot this season, who are playing on a line that's been a little inconsistent week to week, and they played great. I mean, Dante looked so comfortable in that game. He looked confident. It didn't really look like they took a step back with those guys, either in pass protection and pass protection or in the running game. I mean, this was another game where I don't have it right in front of me, but I think the Ducks were close to another 200 yard rushing performance. Dante was efficient through the air. I know he had that one pick, but overall, like, being able to find Kenyon Sadiq, turns out that guy's pretty good. And if you don't have anyone else to throw to, just mash that Sadiq button. But yeah, like I think the biggest thing I took away from that game and just from Oregon as a program in general is, you know, we've talked a lot the last 3 to 4 years about the transfer portal. And that's where the Ducks have gotten a lot of their impact players, you know, whether it be Bo Nix or Dylan Gabriel or Tez Johnson or some of those stars. But, you know, one of the things over the last couple of years is the Ducks have compiled back-to-back top five recruiting classes. I think they have three top 10 classes in the last 10 years. And what you've really seen is you've seen that talent that's coming in bring the floor up too. So like, yes, like there are a lot of those headlining transfer guys, but by like the Ducks just have so much depth there. So like they are able to throw in guys at receiver, throw in guys on the offensive line that are a lot better than the Ducks had depth wise in the past years. So I just think that this is a program where, you know, obviously it's not ideal to be losing starters, but I think that they've just built themselves into something that where they can not only weather it, but they can actually still play pretty darn well against a quality football team.
He's Tyson Alger, the I-5 Corridor Lookout Eugene Springfield. Check out his work. It's always great stuff. Joins us every Wednesday at 10:30 to talk Ducks. I don't know if you felt this way, but my eyeballs, I was fortunate enough to be at the game. My eyeballs told me two best players on the field were Mekhi Lemon and Kenyon Sadiq. And boy, they are both as advertised in the eyeballs. I know Mekhi Lemon's stats weren't amazing, but I think you could see with your own eyeballs why he is so hyped. But I want to kind of flip it to some people that had some struggles. And mostly, when you look at this USC receiving corps, Tanuk Hines has 141 yards. Jacoby Lane has 108 yards. Both have six catches. Brandon Finney did not have the best game. Now, he's going up against maybe one of the best wide receiver groups in all of college football. Is that a concern for you going forward, or is that chalked up to a little bit of youth, or is it kind of we knew they were going to throw the football, let's prevent the big plays and just let them have some and not freak out?
Can I take a little bit of all three on that one?
Sure.
You know, Finney's been fantastic all year.
I would agree.
He's a true freshman. He's going to be a true freshman All-American. I think he has a case to be included in at least one of the regular All-American teams as well. I mean, at 6'2", athletic, he's so rangy. But, you know, we just saw the Ducks play about a month's worth of teams that can't throw the ball, that don't have star receivers, that don't have a Mekhi Lemon and company. And so, yeah, the Ducks did allow, and especially Finney allowed some explosions in this game, and they did get beat at times. But I think it's a mixture of, you know, Finney guarding the best receiver he's probably ever seen in his career, a UFC offense that knew out of all the things that it could do that throwing the ball was probably how it was going to get its yardage. And yeah, like I think it's a mixture of a guy kind of getting his feet wet and getting his reps in. He didn't have the best game, but also like I don't think this is a huge worry. Like coming into this game, like the Ducks knew that if they could at least make USC one dimensional, they were going to be okay. And so, you know, looking at a guy specifically like Lemon, I believe he had two touchdown catches, but his yards weren't all that impressive. So like they were able to keep him in check somewhat, but you know, USC was going to get its yards in some way or another. And so like, I'm not as concerned. And, you know, kind of going into this Washington game, Williams is a great passer. The Huskies can run the ball a little bit, but I just don't think that they're going to be able to take the top off quite like USC was able to on Saturday. I mean, go back and look at that first half. I think USC was on pace for like 600 passing yards after like the first half, and the Ducks were able to kind of shut that down a little bit more in the second. So I think it's a learning process, but yeah, at some point those guys are going to take some licks, and it's just a matter of how you bounce back from it.
Speaking of just opposing offenses and what they're able to do from the passing game, I want to look at the running game. How the hell are the Ducks able to just consistently shut down the run? I mean, another great game from them that they allow USC to just – 52 rushing yards the week before against Minnesota. It was 62. Iowa, 101. What are you seeing that is just able to be the see the consistency in stopping the run week after week?
Well, they have those two real big boys up front in Bear Alexander and Amari Washington. When you have about like 650 combined pounds up the middle like that, that's a pretty good wall. I thought Bear was great in this game. He's played pretty good the last month after transferring from USC last year, and a lot of people kind of questioning his motor and motivation. He's turned into a great player for the Ducks. And, you know, you kind of mix that with just like the athleticism they have on the edges. For example, I know Mateo Uliangalele hasn't posted the same type level of stats that he did last year, but I thought he was great in this game. He had a sack, he had a couple tackles for a loss. And I think just kind of the overall speed along the edges mixed with the size. And then, you know, behind them, you have a pretty good guy in like Bryce Betcher, who had 13 tackles in that game, along with a rushing touchdown. I just think Oregon's front seven is incredibly athletic and very sizable. And that's kind of their bread and butter right now is they can shut you down on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought up Bear Alexander, because, I mean, Amari Washington had a lot of attention coming into this, and there was a lot of question marks about Bear Alexander, what he's going to do this year, and you're right. I think, really, since that Penn State game, he has been showing out week after week.
Yeah, and that was so important for this team, too, because I do think that, like, some of the unheralded guys from last year's team, you know, you look at, like, a Derek Harmon, who was a pretty high draft pick and didn't – was kind of like one of those also ran guys coming into last season and really solidified that line. I think we definitely have a similar situation this year with Alexander and also Washington.
He's Tyson Alger, the I-5 corridor lookout, Eugene, Springfield. We'll take a quick commercial break. When we come back, let's get into rivalry week here as the Ducks take on the Huskies from Seattle. And we'll kind of gauge what the Huskies are going to have to do to shut down, because, boy, I'll give you a sneak peek. I don't think it's going to be pretty. We'll do more with Tyson next. 105.1 The Fan.
Looks really hot.
Tyson Alger joins us from the I-5 corridor lookout, Eugene, Springfield, as Tyson always does every single Wednesday. We're happy to have you, bud. Thanks for sticking around for one more Seggy. Let's get into this rivalry weekend. Look, I don't know if it's my Coug color showing or what. I think you should never underestimate your rival. When it comes to these, I mean, for the first time in maybe a long time, everybody's eyes are glued on the Egg Bowl. But I just don't see it from this Husky team, as they've really, in my opinion, struggled over the last few weeks to really give Oregon a run. What is it going to take for UW to make this a game on Oregon? Or can they rest a little bit on the just pure and adulterated hatred for each other?
Yeah, you know, I've always found in life hatred gets you places. I think.
Well, I work with Danny Meringue, so I think I've heard that as well.
you know, so there might be some mileage there. I mean, look, like Husky Stadium's a tough place to play, especially when they have something on the line. I mean, obviously, like they're eliminated from the playoffs, but I think it would be pretty fun if you're a Seattle fan to put a big old limp into Oregon's playoff chances. So I think that's going to be a pretty raucous environment. And you know, Oregon does have some nightmares in that stadium. I remember being right even with the goalpost as Camden Lewis missed a couple years ago. Bad game for the Ducks there. But I think looking at this one, you know, this is a much better Washington team than the one that they smoked last year. I think their program has gotten better, not only on the field, but you see their recruiting rankings rising, and that's all great if your coach doesn't leave. But I think the Huskies have a fair amount of anxiety with Jed Fish and some of those open positions. But yeah, I mean, like this is a quality team. They have a fantastic quarterback who's really efficient with the football. He can move around too. I think he's got 400 to 500 rushing yards on the season, which is concerning if you're the Ducks and you kind of look at some of the holes in their defense, whether it be third down efficiency. The Ducks are just really bad at getting the stops when they absolutely need to, and they're pretty bad in the red zone as well. So I do think that this is a Washington team that, you know, if they can get into kind of third and short situations or get into the red zone, I do think that they have the weapons to be able to advance the football and score. But, you know, I think the biggest opportunity for Washington in this game is they're a pretty stout run defense. You know, I know we've said that for a few weeks in a row, whether it be Wisconsin or Iowa or even Minnesota. You know, that was kind of like the big focus for those teams. It's like, if we can make the Ducks one-dimensional, if we can make Dante Moore throw the ball. The Ducks, I believe, are 15-1 over the last 2 years when they rush for 200 yards or more, and the Huskies don't let that happen that often. So if the Huskies can be one of the first teams this year to figure out what the key is to stopping a Jordan Davidson, a Noah Whittington, or whoever the Ducks throw out there, I don't think Washington's going to win, but if it gets close, or if they can hold it close and if they can make sure they don't get blown out, then the X factors kind of come in. Then the crowd comes in, then the rivalry comes in, then, you know, potentially the weather comes in. So I don't think Washington has the horses to stick in this game, but if it's close, throw everything I said out the window, because that's when kind of history and the rivalry comes into play.
Well, and that's where I'm looking at, like the Vegas betting angle, Tyson, is that this game right now is Oregon 6.5, which I remember last week.
It's a bigger spread against USC.
I mean, when I heard that last week, I was just like, take the Ducks all day long. I think what we've seen from Washington this year is when they play elite defenses, that offense does not show up. Ohio State, Michigan, they're not elite, but Wisconsin has a really good defense. It's the top 35-40 defense in the country. What am I not seeing that Vegas is? Because to me, this should be double the spread that it is, at least.
I mean, there's a chance that Vegas is just looking at it and going like, okay, Oregon's played pretty well 3 games in a row with just 4 receivers on the roster. What are the odds that they can do it 5 in a row? Or, you know, maybe they're taking a look at the offensive line and being like, okay, we don't know if Poncho's going to play this game. We don't know which of the tackles are going to play this game. Maybe at some point the Ducks show some attrition because of all these injuries. Like that's really the only thing that I can figure out there, because if you're wanting to talk about going on the road and playing in tough environments, Penn State was pretty tough. You know, I don't care what their record is right now. That was a very tough road game. Iowa was pretty tough. I don't care what their record is right now. That was a very tough road game in tough environments in a game that doesn't necessarily fit Oregon's style. So, they're used to doing this. I think Washington is about on par, probably talent wise, or competition-wise with maybe an Iowa, but I just think that this late in the season, I think the Ducks are just used to it. They have all these young players that we talked about at the start of the year that didn't have the experience and needed to kind of get in the flow of the season. Well, this is the 12th game. As Landon keeps saying, like, none of these guys are freshmen anymore when it comes to playing time and availability. I just think there's too much on the line for this Ducks team, and I can't imagine how much Landon wants to beat like a decent Washington team instead of just kind of like the rollover like last year, because he's still 1-3 in his career against the Huskies, and this would be the biggest one for him to get to this point.
He's Tyson Alger, the I-5 corridor. Look out, Eugene Springfield. We'll get you out on this. Damon Williams is gonna face a new challenge. I loved Lanning's poke at the SEC over the weekend and not playing Chattanooga State, and kind of talking about the depth of the Big Ten, which I think is a little overblown. But when you look around the nation, you see people in kind of their cupcake schedules, looking at Ohio State and Texas A&M. Oregon seems to have played teams of all different shapes and sizes. If they go out and can prevent a true mobile quarterback like Damon, is there really anything else you need to see from this team to tell you that they can make a deep playoff run?
I think that would be huge for them. You know, as I said, like the Ducks have been very sound on defense this year. They've just been bad in like certain particular down and distances and situations. So I think they haven't quite had to stop someone like Williams this year. I think that would be a big step forward for them. But like also it's still weird that here we are in the 12th game of the season. And like I still don't know how Oregon projects out against some of these other top level playoff teams that are coming in. I think Oregon deserves to be where they're at. I think they're a good team, but you know, when you get to projecting out, you know, how they'd fare against an Alabama or whoever, or a Miami or whoever, I think it's just hard to tell, because I do think the Big Ten has been very top heavy this year. That being said, this is too, like, I still don't think Oregon has a battle off. That Indiana team was pretty good. That's the only game that they've really kind of fallen on their face in. So I think just with the consistency of the running game right now, I mean, it's just like week in and week out, you can schedule in about 175 plus rushing yards from this team. And I think that really really will play for them going into the postseason, and especially here at Washington when you're playing a team that's a rivalry game that you want to be physical, that you just kind of want to hurt some guys in. I think the Ducks have the legs here at least to make a little bit of a run, but I think some other teams are pretty good in this country as well.
All right, I got to ask you this because I know you were there. How was the environment at the Providence Park Portland State Vikings game against the Grizz? I know that you were in attendance. I'm pretty sure that one Jason Sukanik was even in attendance. He told me that he got a media pass. I'm sure we're going to get the hard hitting journalism article from him here soon. But what was the environment like for you, Tyson?
Yeah, I've been waiting on his like 5,000 word piece. You know, like that's why I subscribe.
Keep waiting, bud.
I'm walking around on the sideline. He had better seats than I did. We had a great time. I mean, it's something that I think I probably took for granted when I moved here 10 years ago, of just like football happening at Providence Park. And you know, I know this city isn't necessarily gaga about the Vikings, but to actually like have Portland State play in Portland instead of out at Hillsboro, that was really cool. For Bruce Barnum's sake, I wish that would have happened way earlier in his tenure, because like good luck recruiting any college student when you're not going out and even showing them the stadium. But my Montana alums really showed up. I think there was like 9,000 or so in the park. The Grizz looked pretty good, and then they looked putrid last week against the Cats, but we're not going to talk about that game. But I'm all for more football at Providence Park, because it's a beautiful park right in the middle of the city, and it's kind of just sits there vacant on a lot of Saturdays in the late fall, so why not?
I have a feeling there's a great chance that Jason Sukanik was the largest human being on the sideline there. Just kind of how the cookie crumbles.
I think Portland State could have put him in for a couple of snaps, and it might have helped a little bit.
He's Tyson Alger, the I-5 Corridor. Look out, Eugene Springfield. I do this every time for you, bud. Go ahead, pump the brand. What you writing this week?
Okay, so in like an hour, we have a beat writer back and forth with Christian Capel. He's the Huskies beat writer for On Montlake. So we dive deep into what this game means, not only for the season, but for the rivalry. And then tomorrow I have a piece on Brock Thomas and just kind of his route through Eugene and actually kind of randomly some high level baseball teams that kind of paved the way for him to be the backup quarterback at Oregon. So that's coming out on Thanksgiving. That's all I got for you guys. And great. I got to eat some turkey too.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. So go check it out. The I-5 Corridor. Look out, Eugene Springfield. He's Tyson Alger, joins us every single Wednesday. Thank you again, my friend. Have a great turkey day and enjoy the game. Travel safe.
Hey, you guys too. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
He's Tyson Alger. Every Wednesday, 10:30. We went a little long, so we'll wrap it up. We'll flip this over on the other end and kind of finish up a little chat about UW and Oregon. 503-864-6326. How you feeling out there? Let us know your thoughts. I'll read some on the other side. 105.1 The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Dianaroga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world. there was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.